Hey guys, welcome to the Paddler's Playbook, a kayak fishing experience. On this episode, the guys are joined by tournament angler and kayak guide, Matt Scotch. For the first 10 minutes, the guys talk about meeting the bro staff, Chris's recent fishing trip, and the Houston Fishing Show. After that, Matt and the guys discuss the advantages of bass fishing from a kayak, locating bedding fish, and the time that the game warden saved Matt from a catfish attack. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the paddle.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Podcast Land. I'm your host, Drew Turner, with my co-host, Chris Lewis, and we want to welcome you guys to the Paddler's Playbook. It's been a crazy couple weeks, guys. We entered into a partnership with ACK. We were out at the fishing show. We got to meet a lot of you guys that came out there and talked to us at the ACK booth. We got to talk kayaking. We got to talk fishing. We got to talk cooking. We got to talk about a whole lot of things. There was so much to see out there. I picked up a few things. I got a Four Horsemen popping cork that Ben was talking about on the Redfish episode. Captain Lane was out there. I also got some of his Death Grip jig heads and the Mad Mullet. Those were some cool little spring baits. They're about 3 inches. Chris, you were out there too. Did you pick up anything at the fishing show or see anything just that blew your mind out there?
You know, I did pick up a couple of things, but first I want to give a shout out to the Austin Canoe and Kayak Group. Man, I really appreciate the love that they gave us. We had a great time at their booth. A lot of smiles, man. A lot of smiles, a lot of really great handshakes. I might have even given out a couple hugs that day. As far as picking up gear, I didn't pick up a whole lot. I had a budget of about $300 that I wanted to spend. And I'm so indecisive. I sit on the fence forever to try and figure out exactly what I want. And I actually lost out on a really good deal. The deal was an Abu Garcia reel. It was the Revo SX, which I absolutely love this reel. It's got 24 pounds of drag. It's got both their centrifugal and Magtrax braking systems. I mean, I can't wait to start fishing with one. But I missed out on that deal at the fishing show. But I did pick up some Bugs Lures. Of course, I stopped by and talked to Heath. Picked up a new Hydra Bug, which I can't wait to use.
That's awesome. It's a bigger profile bait that kind of mimics a mullet. I was talking to Heath about it. That is a pretty sweet bait from what I saw out there. And you were mentioning the Revo just now. The reason I didn't pick up a whole lot is I'm waiting for the Pin Clash 2 to come out. I am going to buy a few of those. I have the first generation. I have 4 of those that I really like. So I'm sure that the Pin Clash 2 is going to be great. You were talking about those bugs. You recently went on a trip. I have not been fishing, so I'm going to live vicariously through you. You know, what happened on your last fishing trip, man? How'd it go?
Well, it was a topwater day. I went out there with one thing in mind, and that was to introduce myself to a new topwater bait that I'm going to use this year. It's called the Jaywalker from Berkeley. It was a grind, man. You know, it's the beginning of our spring season, so the water's still a little bit low. Tides are moving sort of slowly that particular day. And you know what, Drew? I'm actually going to take this conversation and I'm going to try and put it out on our Facebook page with visuals. I think it'll help a lot of people and sort of drop some more knowledge out there. It was an incoming tide and not one of my favorite tides to fish. To be honest with you, I like to fish an outgoing tide. I like to focus on drains from marshes and wait for bait to be flushed out because I know that redfish and trout are going to be sitting on the outside waiting for that bait to be flushed out. Of course, the redfish will crawl all the way back into the skinniest water they possibly can. But this particular day, the marsh was completely empty. And that's another factor that you have to not only think about at this time of the year, is the marsh even going to have water in it? What's my secondary goal here? And what I did was I went out towards the bay, and I knew that once that tide started to kick in, I was fishing the Jones Lake area, and there's a few islands out there. And I knew that once that tide started to kick up a little bit, then it would start to bring in some bait. And then we would have some activity. I would start seeing some feeding. It was probably around 9:30 a.m. And all of a sudden, I started seeing some bait getting smashed on the top. And I was like, perfect, perfect, perfect. This is exactly what I wanted to see because I've got this top water and I need to put it to use. So I start fishing the south side of this island as the tide is coming in because I know bait's going to get stacked up on that south side of the island. And there's probably going to be some trout hanging out on the drop-offs on the little bit deeper edges of these islands. So I start throwing the topwater, and man, Drew, I missed what could have been my personal best trout. That baby came flying out of the water, smashed that topwater as hard as it could, but missed it. My topwater probably flew a good 5 feet from where it originally was to 5 feet to my right. It was amazing to watch that blow up. It was great, man. I wish I had it on video, but trips like these, I don't really take out any cameras to catch any meat, to get any media. It was amazing to see that blow up. And honestly, something like that just kind of makes my day. Even if I don't catch a fish, that makes my day seeing that. I tried to pattern those fish a little bit more. I got a couple more blow ups, but no takers. And I kind of attribute that to the fact that our water's not really warm enough yet. And maybe I didn't have that cadence quite right. I'm still trying to learn this particular topwater. After I patterned these trout, I was going to move around to this area that was a little bit shallower and see what was going on back there. And I could see that mullet were being pushed through this really shallow flat. And I was like, whoa, what's chasing those guys? You know, mullet, sometimes they just, you know, they have a habit of swimming in patterns. But you can also tell when they're being chased and they're getting skittish and they're not exactly comfortable in their environment. So I move around to the backside of the island and I start working this topwater. And once I got to a little bit deeper water, probably knee deep, once I got to a little bit deeper water and I'm working that topwater, boom, man, it turned on. There were redfish all over the place. Next thing you know, we're getting blowups left and right. On these redfish. And the key here is, guys, that the mullet were being pushed around the islands to the backside, and redfish were waiting in areas where they knew that bait would be pushed right over them. It was a fantastic tactic to use. Like I said, I'm going to try and draw some of this stuff up, and I'll even tell people where the location was at. You know, I already said it was in the Jones Lake area of Galveston Bay Complex. I'll show you the two islands. And if you can try and go out there and duplicate the situation and you catch a couple fish, man, I'll be really happy for you.
Yeah, we'd like to see those pictures on the Facebook page too. If you guys are catching some fish and if you've used any of the tactics we've talked about, you know, throw those up on the Facebook page.
Yeah, so hey, Drew, you know, our Facebook page is doing really, really well. We're engaging a lot of people out there. I'd like to see more people get involved with asking questions and possibly getting some dialogue going so that the listeners feel like they're more a part of it. But one way that we can really engage them is I'd love to continue doing these featured kayakers on our Instagram page. Right now, I've got a handful of guys and gals that I'm going to, and we're putting them out there weekly. We do five photos and five very simple questions. And I'd love for our bro staff to come out and say, hey, I'd love to be a part of your featured kayakers. Now, guys, I know bro staff sounds like it's just for the guys, but it's not. It's for the ladies too, okay? Ladies, you're a part of the bro staff as well. And I'd actually like to see the ladies outnumber the men whenever it comes to the kayak world. So ladies, send in your submissions, okay? Let's go ahead and get some photos out there and start featuring kayakers that are a part of our bro staff.
All we need is five pictures of you in your kayak doing what you love, be it catfish, be it crappie, be it redfish, if you like catching sheephead.
Hey, even if it's not fishing, even if it's just cruising around on the bay or the lakes.
Absolutely. If you guys want to give us three fishing pictures and some hiking pictures, we're down with that too. We just want to really focus on the outdoors and the happiness that it brings to us, the happiness it brings to the community, and just happiness in general. Chris, you mentioned something when you were talking just now about wishing that you had the camera out for that topwater bite. We're going to have Rex Del Rey come on the show, and he's going to do a whole show just geared towards, well, I'm sure it's not going to be a whole show, because if you guys have ever met Rex, we're going to have some fun on that show. We're going to have some good stories. But, you know, the main episode for that one is going to be filming while on the water, how to do it, you know, what kind of setup Rex is doing, what kind of stuff he's used in the past. If you haven't checked out the Live Live and the Fish Fresh Facebook and Instagram, where he only shows you the eats when he's sight casting, or, you know, people who use the action hat are doing the eats on there, dude, those are awesome. And I can only imagine a huge trout kicking it 5 foot in the air would be something you want to catch on camera. So, guys, check in for us for that episode. We're also going to have a tournament prep episode with Andy Rice and Todd Hart. From talking to them guys at the fishing show, we're going to get two completely different perspectives on it. You're going to have to tune in for that. And then again, Heath Hipple's going to join us soon from Bugs Lures. I'm sure he's going to talk about the Hydra Bugs, and we're going to talk about sight casting. All these episodes are going to kind of flow into each other. But right now, we're going to talk about some bass. Chris, who's our guest today?
So guys, our guest today, I'm really stoked about this because I fish mainly inshore, saltwater fish. I'm not really big on freshwater fishing. Of course, I grew up fishing freshwater, but it's left my vocabulary. So our guest today, he's a former head chef turned bass pro and kayak guide. His guiding business, Lone Star Kayak Guide, began just 5 years ago. And it's a partnership between him and a good friend, Joe Davis. Through their love and passion for kayak fishing, they're able to dish up decades of fishing knowledge to their clients. And today, Matt Scotch is here to serve it up warm for the Paddler's Playbook. Now, you know, Matt, I like mine served up a little bit on the rare side. So if you don't mind, keep it bleeding just a little.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. I'm glad to be here on the Paddler's Playbook with you guys tonight. And, you know, looking forward to talking a little fishing with you guys.
Awesome, man. So Chris talked about you being a chef and the kayak guide. Mm-hmm. I want to hear about the podium. How many times have you been on the podium for the KBF tournaments?
Oh, man, that's hard for me to count off the top of my head.
I mean, how many top 10 finishes have you had? Oh, how many top 10 finishes are we talking?
Quite a few. I mean, I can't even count, but it's probably more than 15, quite a few more.
Yeah, and that's exactly why we wanted to get you on here, because we want to get some of the best kayak fishermen in the nation on this show just to talk and share. We want to pick your brain to make us all better fishermen, because we all know we enjoy the water more when we're catching fish. So we're glad to have you. Yeah, we're glad to have you on here. And the first question we always ask everybody, so tell us about your most vivid fishing memory. If someone asked you, you know, give me one memory that really, you know, you would like the world to know about your fishing story. What's that one memory?
Man, there's a lot of memories when I was a kid. I got to fish a lot, and I fished a lot on my own when I was a kid. So I got a lot of experience as a kid, like as a young kid fishing. I'd say when I was probably 4 years old, and that's a long time ago to remember a fish catch. But at my grandparents' pond, you know, the whole family was down there on the pond, and they had like kind of like a little gazebo on the pier, and, you know, everybody's sitting down there interacting, kind of hanging out. And I took a goldfish and I put it on a hook and just dropped it over the side of the dock and caught like a 7-pound bass.
What? And,
yeah. Whoa. I mean, I know there's not a lot of challenge to, you know, catching a 7-pound bass with live bait, but I was like 4 years old.
And, yeah, not only that, but you missed episode 2 where we talked about not using goldfish.
Oh, yeah. You know, we're talking about like 1989 here, so, you know, probably didn't know much better when I was about 4 years old.
That was awesome. So you've been slaying bass since you were 4 years old.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's got the literal green thumb, man. Green fish thumb.
Yeah. I got to fish a lot. Like I said, those are my grandparents' ponds, and I would spend my summers up there with them, and they had 3 stock tanks on the farm, and so, like, all day I would just go out there and fish. And, you know, from the time I was, like, a little kid, I just kind of had a love for it, you know. I was always excited to go out there and do that, and it was, like, the only thing I really wanted to do. You know, I did a lot of other things as a kid, but fishing is one of those things I always came back to and I always look forward to doing it again.
I love this because this is actually very similar to my upbringing. My grandparents had stock ponds, and I swear every chance that I had, I was out there on one of those stock ponds.
Yeah, I mean, it was just fun, you know, just like kind of like freedom, you know, you're kind of out there in nature and, you know, you're seeing a lot of things, you know, you're a kid, so, you know, like you're seeing all these new things, you know, new experiences and, you know, kind of figuring out how to catch fish and fool fish and, you know, it was a good time, man. I was definitely blessed to be able to fish as much as I did when I was younger.
Where was this at? Was this, I know you and I had a very brief conversation yesterday, and you told me that you were from the Rosenberg area, which is south of Houston. Yeah. And was this out there in the Rosenberg area?
No. So my grandparents lived up on in Whitesboro, Texas, which is kind of on like the southwest side of Lake Texoma. And that was my mom and dad, or my mom's parents. And my dad's parents lived on the other side of Lake Texoma. And so their place was on like much closer to the lake, and they actually had a boat down on the lake. So when I wasn't at the farm, I was at my dad's parents, you know, and doing striper fishing and kind of lake fishing up on the lake over there.
You know, I've never caught a striper.
Really? They're a lot of fun. Really. It's like catching a redfish.
Are they?
Yeah, they fight very much like a redfish.
So now, Drew, I know that they've got quite a bit up in Conroe, right, by the dam or something.
Yeah, there's some stripers in Conroe. I actually have pictures of my son with a nice striper when he's about the same age as Matt, and I really hope one day when he's on a podcast like this, that's his fishing memory, is catching that striper with his dad out at a Point Aquarius marina. Hey, Matt, so how did you get from four-year-old Matt with a goldfish catching that seven-pound bass in a stock pond to the kayak king of the KBF? You know, how did you get there? What was your first kayak that you got into? What kind of led you into kayak fishing?
Yeah, so it was kind of a slow evolution, you know. I didn't really do any tournament fishing when I was younger or anything like that. I just had a love for fishing. And when I wasn't up at my grandparents', we were, like you mentioned, we're down in Rosenberg, and I did a lot of inshore fishing as a kid. We had a place in East Matagorda Bay down in Sargent, Texas. And every weekend we would go down to the coast and turn on the, you know, the lights on the pier. And that would bring in the trout. And I just did a lot of fishing as a kid. You know, I got to do that a lot. And then I guess when I was 16, we moved to West Texas. So we moved from the Houston area out closer to Lake Amistad. We had a ranch out there and we moved out that way. And so I didn't have all the inshore fishing anymore. I had to learn how to bass fish. Like that was kind of like I had bass fished like in ponds and some lakes and little canals and stuff like that in the Houston area. But I never really learned how to bass fish until I kind of moved to Lake Amistad or that area. And that's like where I kind of started figuring out how to bass fish some. The bass fishing was really good out there. So like it really didn't, it like you have an overinflated like sense of confidence, like how good you were. You know, you go to some other places and, you know, the fishing's much tougher than it was out at Amistad when it was in its heyday. But, you know, it was just kind of like all those little experiences kind of like were like the building blocks. I didn't get a kayak until I was probably 27. I had looked online for a long time. I wanted to get a Hobie Pro Angler, but I just didn't want to pay like the brand new sticker price. And at the time, like a new Pro Angler was probably like $2,800, like around $3,000.
Yeah, nobody wants to pay sticker price on a Pro Angler.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hell, I still don't want to put paid sticker price on a Pro Angler.
Yeah, and I mean, this is like 2010, 2011. You know, that's the kayak I wanted, but like I said, I was shopping around trying to find a good deal on one, and I finally found one online, and it was Ty Sutherland's from 30 Miles Out. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he was selling his down in San Antonio, so I sent him a message. I was like, hey, man, if you can hold that for me for like an hour or however many hours it takes me to drive down to San Antonio, I was like, I'll come and get it from you. And so he told me he would. And I went down there and picked it up from Ty. And yeah, that was my first fishing kayak.
And was a PA.
Was a PA, yeah, like a used awesome. PA.
12 or 14?
It was a 14. The 12 wasn't out yet.
Gotcha.
The 12 came out like maybe a year and a half after I bought the 14, and I sold the 14 and upgraded to the 12 when it first came out.
You consider that an upgrade?
I did, yeah, because, I mean, it was an upgraded seat change, and there were some other changes were different about it. They had gone away from.
You went to the Vantage seat.
Yeah, Vantage seat. The old Hobie had a cutting, like a kind of like a cutting board station in the middle. Right. The new one had like a tackle management area down in the floorboard. There were just some things about it that made it a lot nicer.
Well, that is a lot nicer than my Ocean Kayak Scrambler that I started in. I wish I would have started in a PA, and maybe I would do more bass fishing than I do currently do now.
Well, I didn't give you the goddamnest truth about my first kayak. It was an inflatable kayak, and we were out of Givens Creek.
Oh, well, come on. You got to tell us about that one, Matt.
Yeah, we're out of Givens Creek catching catfish, me and a buddy of mine, and I've got a stringer full of catfish, and they drift into the inflatable, and I can hear the chambers like just shooting air out, but it had five air chambers, and it was only like one or two that was like kind of damaged at the time. So anyways, I was like, oh, well, I'm still floating, even though I am across the lake in this inflatable, you know, like way for like, you know, 2 miles away from the truck, you know, I'm still going to keep fishing because the fish are biting, you know, phenomenal. So anyways, I keep stringing them up, and I catch another catfish, and I'm fighting this one. He swims underneath and hits another chamber. And I was like, it was like I was on a pool noodle, like, that was totally going flat.
Yeah, next thing you're on a float tube.
Like, this thing was just a floating piece of plastic out there. It was not an inflatable. And anyways, I was like, oh, it's time for me to get going now. So I start paddling back, and I'm about to go under out in the middle of freaking Purtis Creek. Givens Creek. And about that time, a game warden comes passing me on the way by, on his way back in. And I flagged him down and told him what was going on, told him the catfish poked a hole in my boat. And he offered to give me up a ride. He didn't want me to drown out there.
That's good of him.
Yeah. But I told him, I had a buddy with me who was paddling back, and I was like, hey, man, can my buddy get a ride too? And he asked if his kayak had any holes in it. And I told him no. And he said, well, he can paddle then. he made my buddy paddle all the way back.
I guarantee you he called all of his game warden friends and he said, you will never guess what I pulled out of Gibbons Creek today. It was a half-inflated inflatable kayak that some catfish decided to attack.
I mean, yeah. So, I mean, that was like my real first story with like a fishing kayak. And then I obviously went and upgraded to a much better fishing kayak.
Yeah, well, the inflatables actually have probably gotten a little bit better since then as well.
Yeah, I bought, this was a $70 Walmart special.
Oh.
This was a glorified pool noodle that I was out there fishing on. It might as well have been one of those green alligators that people put in their pools.
I'm gonna throw a tip out there for everyone listening right now. All right. Tip of the day is, don't expect to get good kayak advice for purchasing a kayak at the same place you buy your chicken breasts.
Oh, man.
You grabbed that inflatable and you just thought that was a great idea. And I'm sure everybody that was working there thought it was a great idea, too.
Well, you know, we'd actually seen this guy. We'd been inspired by this other guy we'd seen out there. Because I had like a little bass buster I had been fishing that lake out of. And we watched this other guy one day. Like, he backs to the water with his like Corolla, and he pulls out this inflatable with this awesome like electric pump, and he pumps it up badass, and he just goes hauling ass across the lake. And me and my buddy looked at each other, and I'm like, man, we need something like that. That'd be badass, right? And so, like, we saw these at Walmart, and we're like, this is kind of like that, you know? You know, $70, what's it going to hurt, you know? And, yeah, it was almost an expensive lesson.
Man, I love that story. What about you, Drew?
That's an awesome story, and it kind of segues into something that me and Chris are going to be at coming up on March 28th. Chris, you want to talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely, guys. So, you know, you want good kayak advice, right? So you don't want to go to the same place where you buy your produce and your meats. ACK, demo days, they're just right around the corner. I mean, literally right around the corner. By the time this episode drops, the Austin location at Hyde Park will have already been done and over with. However, I know for a fact that a ton of people that they're going, they're going to have a blast this weekend at demo day. Hyde Park is just a really cool place. My wife and I, we go there regularly. I mean, we take the 3-hour drive just to go there for ACK demo day because it's a fantastic place for demo days. And then on the 21st and 22nd, they have a demo day in San Marcos at the Texas Ski Ranch. The next one will be in the Houston demo day, which will be for both of our stores. We've got a store off of Bissonnette and we've got a store in Spring. The demo day will be at a private lake in Conroe. And it's always such a good time for kayakers, kayaks, and just the brotherhood of kayaking. The address, if you guys are interested in going, it's 3941 Butler Road in Conroe, Texas. And don't worry, as you're going there, you know, your GPS is going to help you. There'll be plenty of signage on the side of the road once you start to get close to your destination. And it'll help guide you into where you need to go to the lake. This will be, of course, on Saturday and Sunday, March 28th and 29th. Saturdays from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. and Sunday the 29th from 12 p.m. to 4 p.m. If anybody has any questions or they need any information about demo days or any questions really in general, just take a note of the following phone number and give them a call, okay? The number is 888-828-3828. Of course, that's for ACK and any information for the demo days that are coming up.
Yeah, man, the demo days is going to be great. You guys get out there, try out a bunch of kayaks. Me and Chris will be out there. We're going to have a booth set up. We're going to interview some of the vendors because we're going to have a show coming out that's going to have the vendors from Demo Days telling you what's new from some of the best brands out there. We're also going to have an Ask the Guys Anything segment where you can walk up to us. If you have a question you've been dying to ask, you can ask it. We're going to have all our recording equipment out there. We're going to answer it right there. And then you have your chance to be on the Paddler's Playbook. We're also going to have some prizes out there, guys. ACK has hooked us up. Egrid Bates has hooked us up. Check out our Facebook page, The Paddler's Playbook, and check us out on Instagram, at Paddler's Playbook. And we're going to post up pictures of what we're going to be giving away. We don't want to reveal it just yet. We think the visual is going to be better than, you know, us talking about it here. But check us out on social media there and, you know, get in touch with the show. Let us know what kind of stuff you want to hear. And look out for those prizes because we're going to be having monthly giveaways for you guys. And this will be our March monthly giveaway. Okay, so this episode is all about bass. And it's about springtime bass. So, Matt, during the spring, one thing we know we're going to have changing weather, and it's probably going to be pretty windy out there. Mm-hmm. How do you deal with the wind during the spring, you know, when out there on the lake? And, you know, is there a threshold where you're just like, I'm staying home today, it's too windy, I'm not getting out there and messing with this stuff?
Yeah, I mean, when it is Texas and it is always windy in the spring here. So, I mean, if you want to fish, you just have to get out there and deal with it. And the thing is, like, you can't always cross the lake or, you know, maybe do it exactly the way you would do on a calm day. But a lot of times if you look at the map and you look at the wind forecast, you can pick places that are more protected to fish. And in the springtime, the fish are looking for those more protected areas too. So you find that protected water and you just kind of put your head down and go fishing. And you normally catch them in the springtime if you do that. I'm having to do that okay. Right now at Lake Fork.
Okay. But so is there a miles per hour, though, on the wind where you're just like, this isn't worth fighting this wind, I'm staying home?
Not really. It just depends on where you know, every situation's unique, you know, like, I can put in, like today, the wind was blowing probably over 20 miles an hour, but where I put my kayak in and did all my fishing at was really protected. So I could, you know, even though it was blowing 20 miles an hour, I had no issues fishing in there just due to how protected it was. So, I mean,
yeah,
you know, it just depends, you know. I mean, if I were somewhere different, like down on the coast, and let's just say you can't get away from the wind and you have bad wind and bad tides and all that. Well, then maybe I look at it totally different, you know, and say, yeah, I'm not going to go out in that because it's, you know, miserable conditions. But like I said, a lot of times you can find protected water on a lake to fish in the springtime, no matter how windy it is.
Yeah, for me, being down on the coast and stuff, if it's sustained winds over 15 miles an hour, I'm probably going to stay home and watch Netflix or, you know, rearrange my garage. Chris, do you have a number in mind? Because I know this is something that I see a lot in the forums and on Facebook, people asking, is there a number you have in mind that if it's sustained winds, you're going to figure something else out to do?
I've got friends that literally think I'm a freaking idiot. Because
you have one, like, you have one on the podcast with you right now.
There was a time where I asked my friend Dennis to come out fishing with me. He's like, are you serious? It's gusting 25, sustained, you know, 20 mile an hour winds and gusting 25. Are you really going to go fishing? I'm like, man, I got to go check out this spot. I don't care what it's going to be like. I do have my comfort zone though. And that's around 15 miles an hour. Like if I have a choice, you know, fishing that day is just leisure fishing. Well, it's not going to be leisurely if it's kicking my ass out there. Mm-hmm. So, but I will, especially this time of the year, because I have to go out and pre-fish. I'm fishing in almost anything.
All right. So if the wind's not too much of a issue, Matt, what are the bass doing in the spring? You know, March, April, I know it's different depending on what region you're in. But, you know, in general, March through April, where are the fish at? Where are they going? What are they doing? What are they feeding on? I mean, what's happening with the bass in the spring?
Yeah, I'll use Lake Fork as an example since I'm here right now. But, I mean, they're spawning right now. I mean, they're pulling up on beds. They're pairing up. And they're in shallow water. Water as shallow as 8 inches. I mean, and they're pushed way back up in there where the boats have a harder time seeing them and getting to them. And there's some really, really big fish up shallow. They're eating a lot of shad. They're eating frogs. Just anything that kind of gets in their way. Bluegill. Right now, you know, anything that's up shallow, a bass will take advantage of and eat it.
Are they to the point where they're protecting those beds, or are they just starting to move up shallow?
No, I mean, they're just now moving up. I mean, all week there's been fish on beds here at Lake Fork. So the first wave of fish is coming up shallow, and the rest are right there behind them. So
Matt, consider me one of your novice listeners, okay? Somebody that knows nothing about bass fishing, because I honestly do not. Now, when you say bed, are we talking like apostropedic, acerta? I mean,
now when a bass makes a bed, it needs something where there's some hard bottom, and it just fans out, you know, like a smooth area, so that when it puts its eggs down, that they can stay put right there, so that the male can fertilize them.
So this is the bass beds. Is this something that is there a specific area you would find this?
Yeah, you're going to find it up shallow anywhere there's hard bottom.
So up shallow anywhere there's hard bottom. Gotcha.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking anywhere. And how deep they'll make them kind of depends on water temperature and water clarity. But, you know, here I'm on Lake Fork right now, so the majority of them are in 3 to 1 foot of water. And you just get up shallow and you just look around and a lot of times, depending on where you find them at, the bed will actually kind of pop with your polarized sunglasses. Like, as you're looking at the bottom, you'll see, like, solid colors, and you'll see a cleared-out area. Well, that cleared-out area is where the bass has gone in there and fanned all the rocks out or fanned all the grass out and made a smooth little bed.
And they're not necessarily sitting, like, right on top, but they're somewhere in the area?
Most of the time, they don't just sit on top of it. They're close by.
Awesome, man. I'm going to come take a trip up there so you can actually show me what the heck it is that we're talking about. I got to see this for myself.
Yeah, it's pretty neat. I've seen some really big ones up shallow here at Lake Fork this week.
So you're actually sometimes you're sight casting, you're actually seeing them, but the rest of the time, I mean, it's more like you're looking for beds and then you're casting around the beds. How is that working?
Yeah, I mean, you kind of, every fish is different. Sometimes they'll bite your bait right away, and sometimes they've been messed with and caught before and they won't touch it. So you kind of have to check the temperament of the fish and kind of get a feel for them, with, like if they'll play with you, if you can get something that, you know, triggers them to bite it. And so bed fishing can be challenging because you can see the fish there, but that doesn't always mean that they'll bite your bait. And you can spend a lot of time on that fish and not catch it. So there's some good thing. There's some perks about bed fishing, and there's kind of some drawbacks to it too. Like I said, sometimes you get those fish that are just really stubborn, and you know they're really hard to catch.
So do you change up your tactics whenever that happens? I mean, maybe you're throwing, you know, a soft plastic to this fish, and then you change up and use something different.
I mean, yeah. I mean, there's 100 things you could do. Like I said, you're kind of just checking the temperament of the fish, you know, to see kind of what it's in the mood for, you know, because sometimes like they're so skittish that like you throw a bait up there and you know, it's just like when you find a skittish redfish up in shallow water and it doesn't want to play, and all you do is spook it, you know. It's kind of the same thing. Like, you know, you throw your bait out there and kind of get a gauge on what the fish is wanting to do, or kind of what it's telling you. They're all different. Like every single fish you find on a bed is going to be a little different. Or at least that's kind of my experience with it.
So other than just looking for beds and, you know, trying to throw towards bedding fish, what are the other bass doing that haven't moved up yet? The stragglers that are behind, are you targeting those fish, or fish move up first? Do the bigger fish move up last? How does that work?
Generally, like your males are going to pull up first. Your smaller male bass are going to pull up and scope out the bedding areas. And then your females will kind of come in and they'll pair up, and, you know, then they kind of, they'll make their little beds. The bigger fish, they don't necessarily come up first, but big fish will come up right away, if that makes sense. There will be waves. As these moon cycles kind of come in the springtime, you're going to have waves of fish with every full moon that pull up to spawn. And a lot of those fish will kind of stage back in the creek channels. You know, a lot of times, like your last creek channel bend far back in a bay will hold fish in it. There's a lot of different places that can kind of hold fish. But generally, they're in the back third of a major creek. And it can be brush piles, creek channels, rocky points or humps, anything like that. And just anywhere they can kind of group up and hold there and feed and wait for their cycle to be right to pull up and spawn. In the springtime, like, the bass all have one thing on their mind, and that's to come up shallow and spawn. So that's like the one time of the year you know what they're doing. Like, they are coming up shallow. It's just they don't all do it at the exact same time.
So would you say that this is the easiest time of the year to find fish? I mean, maybe not
the easiest time of the year. Yeah, absolutely. Because if you just go around the bank right now, you're going to see them. There's a lot of them. But
it's,
the thing
it
is,
sounds like it might be the most frustrating time, too, because you can see them. They're there. Now you have to figure out how to make a bite and how not to spook them.
It's absolutely the most frustrating time. Like, I would rather them just be thinking about eating, because like, yeah, when they're thinking about spawning, it's like if you're thinking about sex, like, it's like, you know, do you want to eat right now? Someone like throws a pizza in front of you, like no, that's, you know, not what I want right now, dude. Like, no, that's not, you know, that pizza's nice, but that's not what I'm in the mood for. And
that is the first time I've heard somebody pizza, sex, and bass fishing in the same sentence. And that is stuff you will only find on the Paddler's Playbook.
This episode is fire.
So let's get into, you know, maybe some of your tactics for getting these fish to bite. Let's get into a little more specifics on what type of lures you're throwing at them. So it's spring, you're back in that creek, you've found a kind of hard bottom, you're seeing some fish there. What's the first thing you're going to pull out to flip out to them?
It just depends. So if the fish is on a bed, either like a stick bait, like your Yamamoto Senko, or like a 8-inch zoom lizard, you know, just something that looks like a little intimidating to the fish, you know, and you just throw that in there right to the fish. I mean, just throw it right on the fish and see how it reacts to the bait. If the fish doesn't spook off and it noses down on it, that's what you want. You want to see a fish that is looking at the bait. Like a lot of times if that fish has been caught before, you're going to throw your bait in there and it's going to shoot off and take off. And a lot of times that fish is almost impossible to catch. Like you just have to forget about that one and try to move on to one that will look at your bait.
Bro, redfish are nowhere near like that. I've literally caught the same redfish within 30 minutes twice.
Yeah. Bass, I have caught the same bass twice in the same day at different places before. But for the most part, you're not going to catch them twice like that. They're normally a little bit wiser, I feel.
They have
like
to be foolishly hungry in order to do.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, and it's a fish, you know. I mean, it's just an animal, like, you know, it could definitely mess up twice. But I like to think that they don't. Yeah, so when they're shallow, I mean, either like a buzzbait or a frog a lot of times, because a lot of times, like, where these bass are spawning at, there's like real thick cover there. So you need something that's weedless. You know, you throw like a treble hook bait out there, like you're not going to be able to work anything with treble hooks because there's just too much moss and too much vegetation and just kind of just like slimy stuff in the water that's up shallow right now that you would foul your bait up on if you were to throw up there, you know, a number of conventional lures and stuff. But yeah, frogs, cinco's, Texas rig worm, pretty good starts. Even like a fluke, you'll probably throw flukes down on the coast quite a bit. So just like a weightless fluke, kind of skip back real shallow and twitched out over, you know, kind of like a just spawning habitat. That a lot of times is a good way to catch them.
All right, Matt, so I'm going to be a little bit selfish here, and since I can walk to Lake Conroe from my house, I'm going to ask you a little bit about fishing a lake kind of like Conroe, because almost the whole lake is bulkheaded. You know, the whole south end of the lake is bulkheads. It's a lot of docks. You have to go to the far north end to really get any kind of natural structure to it. Can you give us some tips to maybe fishing these docks this time of year? Are the fish going to be close to the bulkheads? I mean, in the springtime, fishing a lake like Conroe, what kind of tactics can we use on these Houston area lakes that are mainly, you know, bulkheaded all the way around?
Yeah, so I would throw, you know, the same, a lot of similar things that I would throw, you know, all around the country. Your wacky rig, Yamamoto, Sticko, worm. Just take that, throw it up shallow, target anywhere there's like a dock, you know, where you have a bulkhead, you're going to have a pier eventually. So where those pier pilings come in, a lot of times there will be some harder bottom there. And those bass they'll fan and they'll bed where the pilings and the bulkheads are kind of there together. That's something I would look for. A lot of times you're going to have marinas and docks and stuff like that. Bass are going to want to get on the protected side. So if you look in there and you see some little protected stretch of water that's kind of on the back side of the docks, between the bank and the docks, that's something you're really going to want to target. Just a little isolated stretch of water that's hard for people to get to, and the fish kind of feel safe and everything to kind of spawn back in that water. Some of the best places that I fish in the springtime are in marinas where there's just some hard to access riprap, where a lot of times, like, you actually have to throw over a dock to get to the water on the backside. Like, you're actually pitching it over the docks to get to that water. And those can be just really, really productive areas in the springtime. And you can find stuff like that all around Conroe. Anywhere there's boathouses and boat docks and stuff like that, there's going to be those little protected stretches. And that's what you want to look for this time of year.
Awesome. I can think of everything that you just said is in the marina, that is right down the street from my house. There's a marina. There's boat houses. It's protected. It's a no-wake zone. There's not a lot of boat traffic because the only people that come in and out of there are the people that live there. Mm-hmm. So you have me wanting to get in my kayak and go out there right now and start flipping those docks and around them pylons.
Yeah, just go out there and throw a, like I said, just like a wacky Cinco. And just go out there and throw it around. A lot of times when you're bed fishing, you'll catch the male first. It's the more aggressive fish. So you catch the small one. And if you throw right back in that same spot, a lot of times the female will bite second.
Do you have to wait a certain period of time between catching them or throwing back? It won't spook the female off, really?
No, because it's a defensive thing. Like, once he's gone, she pulls up and becomes the defender. So she'll pull up and eat. But if he's around, she won't pull up and she won't guard the nest, so to speak.
Okay. I see what you're saying.
She's going to sit back and let the male do the dirty work. But, like, once you catch the male, a lot of times you can restrain the male, like, in the net. Have a net hanging over the side of the kayak with the other fish in the net. And then you throw back in there. And because that male's not in there to grab the bait, the female will grab it.
So that male is going to go straight back to the bed as soon as you throw it back in the water, and it may go fast enough that it gets back to the bed before you can pitch at the female?
Yes.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that. I mean, that kind of sounds like whenever you hear a bump in the night in your house, the female sends the guy out to see what it is, and then she kind of waits back.
You can release bed fish back into the lake after taking pictures with them, and they'll go right back to their bed.
So, Matt, you've really got these bass dialed in. Your tournament success is evident. I mean, like Drew said, he's seen you on the podium many times. You said the number of times you've actually reached a podium is hard to count. This has all sort of transitioned your into your business, and your livelihood. You know, I can imagine the kind of kayak that you need to have for your customers and your clients. I mean, they've got to be high quality products. You're not just going to put your clients in everyday, you know, Pelicans or something that you buy at Walmart and inflate up.
I could.
They might not enjoy themselves. You know, they want to be able to enjoy their time on the water with that craft. But you also have to have some peace of mind, I can imagine, when it comes to how well the kayak is going to hold up. Mm-hmm. So you have the kayak guiding business. What type of kayaks are you putting your clients in?
We're using Hobie Outbacks and Hobie Compasses. And it's kind of a funny story, like how I got into the guiding and using the Hobie Outbacks was winning Hobie Outbacks at this tournament in Oklahoma, the Beaversman Kayak Classic. And after I won my third one, someone said something to me about, you know, what do I do with all those kayaks I've been winning? And I told them I just kind of kept them in the garage as trophies. And they told me I should start guiding, you know, I should look into that. And, I never thought about it before. In all honesty, I never really envisioned myself leaving the culinary world to fish. I just didn't know that was kind of a possibility even. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of how it all happened. It was I was winning those Hobie Outbacks, and you know, somebody told me, hey, you should start doing that. And I thought about it, and I had somebody else kind of say the same thing. And I was like, you know what? Like, there just seems to kind of be like some momentum here. And I got into the guiding thing, man. And the Hobie Outbacks have really held up throughout the years. You know, I've gotten new ones, and they're incredible. I mean, everybody raves about them, and they make my job a lot easier. Just giving people foot pedals a lot of times, like, you got to understand, like, a lot of people that come out, they're beginners to kayak fishing. They're not experienced paddlers or fishermen a lot of times. And giving them a pedal drive kayak that's just really easy for them to maneuver and get around really helps them have a good time out on the water. which in store helps me have a good time out on the water.
You know, I'm not going to lie. I actually looked that up on your website, which is, by the way, guys, it's LoneStarKayakGuide.com. If you're in the Dallas area, I believe Fort Worth area, mm-hmm. you want to go ahead and hook up with these guys, check them out online. Okay. That's LoneStarKayakGuide.com. Like I said, I'm not going to lie. I looked it up and I saw that you guys were using Hobies and I was like, okay, I've got to know, is it because the quality of the product, or is it because you know that your clients are going to have get the most enjoyment out of being on the water?
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely the enjoyment and just the high quality aspect of it. Hobie came down last April and shot a show with me and Joe down on the Brazos River, and we had a just really spectacular day of bass fishing out there. I think our best five bass were like 117 and a half inches. So it's like over 23 inch average on our five fish for the day.
So you're on the Hobie fishing team, aren't you?
Yes.
All right. Is there any other affiliations, any other teams that you're on that you want to talk about?
Yeah. I'm affiliated with Mariner Sales there in Dallas, Texas. Mariner, for people that don't know, is just like a kayak fishing superstore. They have everything. I mean, nuts, bolts, parts, wiring accessories, just every brand of kayak you can think of. If you need something, Mariner Sells more than likely has it, sells it, and ships it, like, you know, right away. So this really great place to do business. I know y'all are with ACK and sponsored by ACK, but if for whatever reason ACK doesn't have it, give Mariner Sells a call, because more than likely they'll be able to hook you up.
So with all this kayak talk and, you know, the bass fishing, what advantages do you think that you have over the big boats? Earlier you said you could get a little shallower.
Oh, it's stealth.
What are some big advantages and what are some challenges?
Well, the biggest challenge is you can't run all over the place. So like a lot of times in bass fishing, you might pick up like a pattern, like you're kind of keying in on something. Like maybe it's like boat docks or boat ramps, private boat ramps, like the concrete that comes into the water. Well, that's something that like you could run out of in the area you're fishing. But if you had a bass boat, you could look at and say, well, this area has a whole bunch of, you know, boat ramps in it too. And so you could shoot across to another area and run a pattern a lot faster. You can't really do that in a kayak. You got to pick an area that you feel like has enough fish and you got to just figure out a way to catch them there. And one of the biggest advantages of the kayak is how stealthy it is. A lot of times you can catch fish, you know, 2 or 3 feet from the kayak, which is a really awesome thing to do. You can't always do that in the bass boat,
because you can't get in there as close. You can't.
Yeah.
Can't get back into those creeks where you're getting, can you?
No. Yeah. A lot of times with the kayak, I mean, I don't have the drive in, like I'm standing up, just pushing the kayak around, paddling around the same way you would on the flats looking for redfish.
And a fiberglass hull on those big boats, they're loud too.
Yeah. I mean, they displace a lot of water. There's a lot of noise going on them that, you know, we don't necessarily think about, you know, it's from the bilges running and the live wells running and the transducers pinging and all those things, the trolling motor, you know, humming, spinning, hitting things under the water. So, I mean, the bass boat's making a lot of noise as it goes through shallow water. And a lot of times the kayak is just like gliding over the water, you know, kind of like a crane walking around the bank, you know, kind of skillfully hunting, not disturbing the fish as much.
You mentioned the transducer pinging. Are you using any type of electronics this time of year? Or are you just mainly relying on sight?
No. I always have the graph on. I'll turn it off if I feel like the fish are just highly pressured and it's making a difference. But a lot of times, like, I have it on just to know water temperatures this time of year. Water temperature is really important in the springtime. Like, you want to know when it's on the trend up. And then as you move into the backs of pockets, I mean, the water temperature can go from 58 degrees up to like 73. And knowing, you know, where that warmth is taking place is really ideal, because that'll tell you you need to start looking for the fish. Yes, I am running my electronics. No, I'm not really fishing deep. But I am running my electronics this time of the year, for sure.
Drew, I've decided I can't be a bass fisherman.
Why is that?
Well, you've been on plenty of fishing trips with me. I'm not the quietest. I'm not a stealthy man. I'm singing ridiculous songs. I'm yelling at people. I'm cussing at fish. I believe that trout and redfish, they're not affected by sound whatsoever. Bass fishing sounds like you've really got to keep your stealth about you. And I'm in the marsh, I'm not quiet at all. In the bay, I'm not quiet at all. I have That's the last thing I'm thinking about.
Yeah, anytime I'm in shallow water around fish, like I'm always just trying to be, you know, as stealthy as I can be. Because the stealthier you are, like the higher your chances are catching fish is going to be. Like if you go through there just splashing around, you know, like a wounded duck, you know, you're gonna spook everything and that's up there in that skinny water. But if
they're looking for wounded ducks?
Well, then then you're in luck. But that's normally not the case.
I just want to double back really quick on something that you touched on a second ago. You were talking about water temperature, and you said, you know, it sometimes it's in the 60s, and then it gets up into the 70s. Ideally, what temperature are you looking for the water before you really start to get back in those creeks that you're talking about?
So anytime that water is around 59 degrees, you're close. And the thing is, you want the water temperature trending up. So, like, as long as it's, like, trending up, like, it's not, like, it didn't drop, you know, 65 to 59. Like, so anytime it's 59 or warmer is when I'm looking well, I mean, honestly, like, I would fish shallow in colder water than that, a lot colder water. But for, like, spawning fish in particular, when it's 59 degrees is when I'm looking kind of for them. And
that's when you're getting up into the shallows and getting back there and really trying to see the fish that are back there.
Yeah, I mean, that's not the most ideal. Like, honestly, like, your more ideal temperature would be anything over 65 to, like, 73. You know, that's more like they're really going to be spawning. But when it's 59, I start looking because there's going to be some up there.
Well, you know, Drew, I think we have gotten a lot out of Matt tonight. To be honest, I think I could probably discuss these topics in more detail and just continue to talk this bass fishing tactics because it's blowing my mind, some of these things. And I think the best way for us to do this is go ahead and fulfill that notion that we had many years ago. And Drew, we need to just go ahead and book a trip, man. I know we've talked about it. We've talked about going up there many a times to fish with Joe, and we just need to go ahead and do it, man. We need to rip the cord this year and make it happen.
Yeah, the springtime's the time to go. We need to get up there. The summers can be okay, but if you can go sometime March or April, that's definitely the best time. That's when the brasses really shows out.
Man, I love this stuff, Matt. I really appreciate you coming on tonight. I appreciate you hanging in, even though we've had some technical difficulties. The show, you know, really appreciates it. I know all of our listeners are going to really appreciate all the knowledge that you dropped for them today. They're going to get at least another month and a half of really good fishing and be able to use your knowledge over the course of, you know, the middle of March and through April.
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt. And if y'all have any more questions or you want to talk about something other than, you know, just spawn fishing, you know, I'm always willing to come on and talk bass fishing with you guys.
Well, remind these guys how they can get a hold of you.
Yeah, you can reach out to me, lonestarkayakguide.com. Leave me a message there. Lone Star Kayak Guide on Facebook, Instagram, or here's my number. You can just call me on my number. You know, no creepy messages or anything, because occasionally I do get weird shit like that. But
they want to call you and talk to you about some pizza.
It really is the best way to get a hold of me since I'm on the go all the time. So my phone number is 830-591-3011. And yeah, you can get a hold of me anytime, and we'll see if we can't set up doing a fishing trip.
Well, Matt, you know, we really appreciate you coming on the Paddler's Playbook, sharing, you know, dropping some of these knowledge bombs on everybody. We're going to take you up on the offer of, you know, maybe some summer bass fishing, some fall bass fishing. We're going to be leaning on you pretty heavily on this show, you know, and anybody else that you could recommend to us. I'm sure there's a lot of guys in your circle that can really catch fish. But like I said, man, we really appreciate you coming on and helping us out and helping me out, because I'm ready to go bass fishing now.
Well, thanks for having me on, guys. I really appreciate it. And if I got you guys excited to go bass fishing, well, that's pretty awesome, because most saltwater guys would never say such a thing. So, yeah, I mean, it's a lot of fun. And
the tug is the drug, baby.
Yeah, it really is. It's a lot of fun. And this time of year, it's just, you know, the time you want to be out there. I mean, the bass are biting, the birds are chirping, the alligators are out. Like, it's springtime in Texas right now, and it's just a nice time to be outside, man. And it's an even nicer time to be out fishing.
So I guess our next episode with Matt's going to be about some river bassing, baby. You know, I'm looking forward to that, because of course that means summertime.
Absolutely, man. I'm wanting to get up there, book a trip with him, get on the river, catch some bass. He's got me excited to go out there on Lake Conroe. Man, I'm ready.
We've got to do it, man. We've got to go ahead. Once I'm done with some of these tournaments this spring, we've got to jump on it. To all of our listeners out there, thanks for joining us tonight. We're going to get out of here just like Matt. We're going to go shower up, get ready for our next day tomorrow.
All right, guys. Thanks for listening. See ya.
Adios.